Catholic Answers Live. Thanks for being with us. I'm Cy Kelly, your host. And today, it's going to be 2 hours of dynamic radio. It always is when we take this topic and we have this guest. The topic, why are you pro-choice? We leave the phones open for pro-choice people to call. You can be kind of pro-choice, a little bit pro-choice, totally 100% pro-choice. But if you identify with that term, pro-choice, in any way, you're welcome to call and talk to us about why you're pro-choice. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. And when I say you're welcome, you really are welcome. We would love to talk with you. 888-318-7884. I don't think we hide this. If we are hiding it, we're not hiding it very well. We are not pro-choice. We're pro-life people. And so you'll be getting our perspective as well. So truth in advertising for you there. But that doesn't mean we won't have an engaging conversation at 888-318-7884. Our guest, as he is for each time we do this topic, is Trent Horn. Trent Horn is an apologist here at Catholic Answers, a globally recognized speaker and debater and author. And he wrote Answering Atheism. He wrote Why We're Catholic. And perhaps most pertinent to today, Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issue. Hi, Trent.
Hello, Cy.
Oh, also the podcaster behind The Council of Trent, which you can find at Trent Horn Podcast. .com. Sometimes it takes a minute for pro-choice people to decide that they want to call us. So I decided that I'm going to try to make your head explode while we wait. And I'm turning my computer so you can't, because I'm going to read you an article.
All right.
Just a little bit of one and see if your head explodes. Okay.
All right. I've got it fastened on. Let's see if it stays there.
Okay. So a Georgia state representative, Trent Horn, will introduce a package of bills to place new restrictions on men's reproductive rights, a response she hopes will call attention to new legislation that would limit women's access to abortions. The bill will be called the Testicular Bill of Rights. Is this new news to you? Am I actually surprising you with this, or have you heard this before?
I'm quite surprised. In my entire life, I've never had the terms Bill of Rights or testicular joined together.
Yeah.
Not once.
Right. So basically, she wants to shift the conversation from abortion to this idea that men are trying to control women's bodies. And so it would be under her bill, it would be considered assault to engage in intercourse without wearing a condom, that kind of thing. And so you're a very disciplined and orderly person. Your head has not exploded, but I thought that might explode your head.
So she wants to – there's a bill, the Testicular Bill of Rights, and it includes different provisions. One of them is that if you engage in sexual relations with someone without a condom
– that's
assault. That's assault. What if the person says they would prefer to not use a condom because it's a grave sin, or perhaps they just don't like the feeling – of a plastic shopping bag intruding on marital intimacy?
Well, I'll read you some more of them because I feel like I'm getting you there. You're almost ready to have your head explode. Kendrick's package, that's her name. I didn't mean to give her name because I didn't want to ridicule her, but I accidentally did there. Her package of bills would require men to obtain permission from their partners to get a prescription for erectile dysfunction medicine, ban vasectomies and punish doctors who perform them, require men to pay child support beginning 6 weeks after a woman becomes pregnant, and make sex without a condom an aggravated assault crime.
I'm okay with making men pay child support if
I was
a woman
like,
pregnant.
I'm on that one too. Like, yeah, you should be paying child support.
I'm not opposed to that at all, requiring that if you engage in the act of sexual intimacy, you are responsible for the effects of that act, whether you're a man or a woman. The problem here is that people don't understand that it's shifting away from what the issue of abortion is to hide it in euphemism.
Right.
This is not a question of your right to reproduce, because if you are seeking to have an abortion, guess what? You already reproduced.
Yeah.
You have a child now. So the question is, are you going to let the child live or not? So that is, it's not an issue of your right to be able to reproduce. It's whether you have a right to inflict harm upon the fruit of reproduction, which would be a child. So when people try to compare restrictions on abortion to restricting men from reproducing, it's completely off point. The problem here is that people won't accept in our modern age, because very, very silly ideas have been lofted to very high status. Men and women are different. Because they are different, the law will affect them in different ways based on their biological differences. And so one of those being that laws related to protecting children in the womb will only apply to women because only women have children within their womb in one sense. Now, in another sense, laws of affecting children in the womb do apply to men still in many cases. That actually, I would argue that current laws related to abortion are very sexist because a man in 38 states under federal law can be found guilty of homicide if he kills a wanted unborn child.
Yeah.
And yet in those same states, if a mother, the mother chooses to abort the child, she's not punished in any way simply because she is a woman. So here we have a case where men are punished for an act just because they are because they're a man. Essentially, that's the act of, or the very, it's either they're not, they're punished differently because they're a man, or there's some weird magical legal thinking that an unborn child becomes human if a man takes their life, but somehow is not human if a woman does, if it, at least if it's the woman to whom is bearing and caring for the child. So it's, yeah, it's quite absurd.
It does strike me, though, that – and again, I want to give the phone number out if you are a pro-choice person and would like to call to defend or share your pro-life position, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. It strikes me that this woman with the testicular rights bill in Georgia got quite a bit of very positive press about this, and certainly at least neutral press in places like – CNN. And it strikes me, however, though, that one of the things we could take from this is that we have now this is not going to be a conversation with intellectual content. This is merely we're going to have derision and insults replace actual debate about the life of an unborn child.
Well, it is unfortunate that on cable news or in public discourse, we can't just sit down and say, okay, let's talk about the issue. Instead, no. We have pointed attack arguments and gotcha moments. And now when I say a gotcha moment, I don't mean a tough question you would prefer to not answer. I mean questions and arguments that are designed to belittle and ridicule another person, essentially loaded questions for which they couldn't possibly give a rational or coherent answer to, simply because you're out to attack and defeat the other person. We're not in a culture of trying to have persuasion and come to truth. It's just I'm right, you're wrong, and I got to defeat you, essentially.
Right.
And so that's just very unfortunate because I believe in truth. I believe that people listening care about. I believe if you're pro-choice, I think you care about truth. And I think that we're human beings and we can have a conversation. Now, we're not going to sit in a circle and sing kumbaya. We have important differences related to issues of moral gravity, but we can still have a productive conversation about where we're not getting one another and how we can move forward.
Again, our topic this hour, why are you pro-choice? If you're making up your mind whether to call and share with us your pro-choice views, let me give you the number again, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Store-wide summer sale on right now. You can get everything at shop.catholic.com for 15% off. Just put in the promo code SPRING19 when you check out at shop.catholic.com.
Your number one source for Catholic apologetics and evangelization, Catholic Answers Live.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Listeners to Catholic Radio, I think, benefit most, at least initially, from what I call remedial catechesis. What Catholic Radio does is it becomes an echo chamber for the teaching authority of the Catholic Church. And what we're doing is teaching many things which have been neglected over the last 40, 50 years. If you listen to Catholic Radio, you know what the Catholic Church teaches.
Al Cresta thinks Catholic Radio is important. So should you.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Trent Horn is our guest this hour, and We're holding all the lines open for both hours today for pro-choice people. If you are a pro-choice person, whether in – I don't want to say in the extreme, but whether you're completely and totally pro-choice in all instances or you're kind of partway pro-choice in some instances, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884 and share your reasoning with us. Let's go to Mary Ann in Montana. Mary Ann, why are you pro-choice?
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I am pro-choice because I see that a lot of times these people who have children that they cannot raise, won't raise, they are on drugs or homeless, and their children just are born into situations that are so horrible, and it perpetuates poverty in our country.
Okay.
So I feel like sometimes it would be better off if these children weren't born.
Mary Ann, let me ask you a question then. Well, first, I agree with you that it's difficult to see any child suffer in poverty or abuse or be neglected or maltreated. I mean, we want every child to have a decent shot at a good future. You know, I think we both agree with that. Let me ask you a question, though. Do some people have children when it seems very clear they probably shouldn't? You know, that they're on drugs, they're criminals, whatever it may be. There's some irresponsible people that say, I want to have a baby, and they have a baby, and it probably wasn't a great idea, and it leads to the things you talked about. Does that happen sometimes?
Yes.
Sure. Well, here's my question, Mary Ann. Should we pass a law saying that if women like that get pregnant and they should not have a baby because the baby's going to have a really terrible life, should we pass a law saying that those women should be forced to have abortions?
No. I think it should be up to the woman getting to decide whether or not.
Okay, but here, let me ask you this question. Wouldn't it be better, though, to force these women to have abortions than for these kids to grow up and have terrible lives, though?
I don't think you could force them. No, I'm not into forcing them.
Okay, so here's where I think maybe we'll have some common ground, okay? So you don't want to force somebody to have an abortion because you don't want to violate somebody's rights just to make sure kids don't live in poverty. That seems to be, you shouldn't force someone to have an abortion because it violates their rights to their body, right?
Yes.
Okay. So if we wouldn't violate a woman's right to control her body, even if it means, you know, kids will be born into poverty, if we don't violate someone's rights for that reason, then why is it okay to violate the rights of an unborn child by killing him or her so they don't live in poverty? So here's the disconnect I'm seeing, that you and I agree poverty is a bad thing, abuse is a bad thing, but we don't violate the rights of a born pregnant woman in order to reduce poverty. So if an unborn child is a human being, a little baby, we can't violate their rights either for that same reason. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I do. But I just also, I have that nagging in the back of my heart, in the back of my mind, that when I see these children, like I have a sister who is a principal of a school for the emotionally disturbed. And these kids are all living in foster care. Nobody loves them. They are not being raised. They are just a drain on society and anybody who has any, like,
then we should, then why don't we just, why don't we, before they're born, tell their mom, you have to get an abortion or we'll make you get one? Because here's the thing, you're really upset. I agree with you. I'm upset when I see kids in these bad situations. And you get that nagging feeling like you wish it didn't happen. But it seems like you also have this feeling like, yeah, that's really bad, but I couldn't just hold down a pregnant woman and make her get an abortion. So the thing is, the revulsion you have at the idea of holding down a pregnant woman and making her get an abortion, that's the revulsion I have at the thought of dismembering a baby through abortion. So I think maybe where we're having a disconnect here is I just want you to be able to see, like, the violation of rights in making someone have an abortion is on par with aborting that person, and that it's even worse with abortion. They don't have a life at all after that. What do you think?
I agree with you, but I just think over, like, we're talking generational, over, like, you know, our society would become better in the next 100, 200 years if we didn't have that.
Let me ask you another question, Marian. Let me ask you another question. I think I agree with you. Let's make society better. But let's ask, though, why is it that some kids are abused or live in poverty? Because what it's, and I don't want to put words in your mouth or make you feel bad, but it almost sounds like you're blaming the victim here. That it's like, there's these kids are going to live in terrible circumstances. So we should abort them so they never have to be in the circumstances. But why aren't we blaming the people causing the circumstances? Like, we want a better world. Isn't it the adults who are drinking, gambling, doing drugs, being lazy, being evil? It sounds like you want to use abortion to fix a moral problem. Like, if you're going to make the world better, it sounds like you got to make people better, right?
Well, how do we do that?
Well, that's what we believe. As a Catholic, what I believe is to make people better is that we are all born with this thing called sin. So the thing is, we are not... A lot of people want to think that, well, we make mistakes. Yeah, if I don't balance my checkbook, that's a mistake. But if I... break a promise to a friend, or I yell at my kids and my wife, that's a sin. I've fallen short of the standard God wants for me, or you, or anybody else. So I believe to make people better, we got to get back to the source of what makes us our best. And what makes us our best is the fact that we're made in the image and likeness of God. The problem is that, so we got the image of God in our hearts. We got a conscience that tells us, even when nobody figures out we do something wrong, there's a little voice inside that says, hey, you shouldn't have done that. That's the little voice of God saying, hey, I made you to be better than this. So I believe to make the world better, we need to help people get back to that source of what makes them their best, to come to know who God is, let God into their life so that God will transform them with his life, which is something called grace, the free gift of his life, to make them better so they can spend eternity with him, and they grow and grow and be more and more like him, to be loving, charitable, sacrificial, jump on the grenade for other people here in this life. That's what I believe. I believe to make people better, you can't just pass a law. You can't just spend money. Those things can be helpful in some circumstances, but you got to get the root of what's wrong with the human heart. And it's our attachment to sin. And when we're fleeing away from God. So, I mean, I know some non-religious people will disagree with me on that, but I think it's essential. So that's why what we do here at Catholic Answers is to tell people about that. That's what I believe I believe at the very least, telling people about that God loves them and God wants them to be better than this and to let God into their lives is better than any of the lives of an unborn child. That's what I think is at least better than that. I don't know. So,
May I share something personal with you, Marianne?
Sure.
I had the great privilege of working several years of my life at a home for children with emotional disturbances, and I've thought that the world was better off with each and every one of them in it. It was one of the great privileges of my life. They were delightful, and I still think of them pretty much every day. So I just because a child has emotional disturbances, has been very severely abused and all that, it doesn't make their life useless or pointless. They can still be wonderful, valuable people.
Yeah, I guess I'm just looking at the bottom line, which isn't right. But, another example is that for special ed per day per child for education, they pay twice as much per day per child for special ed children to get an education, whereas if they were to be able to spend more for the brightest and the smartest of our society, they may be able to go and like do great things.
Well, Marianne, let me offer you 2 points on that. One factual, one moral. First, in the United States, we spend more on students than almost any other developed country, and we actually have some of the lowest test scores. So I have my own personal views about what's wrong with the current education system. And there's a lot that's wrong, but I don't think money will, because we've increased spending over the past 40 years and test scores have not gone up as a result. So I don't believe money's the answer there. But number two, this what you pose as a problem in that we're spending the money we spend on children with special needs should go to children with average or above average intelligence. It makes me a little queasy when you say that. Do you know what eugenics is?
Yes.
Well, what is it?
Well, it's kind of like the not survival of the fittest, but kind of along that same lines where
it's culling of the weakest.
Yeah, get rid of the weakest.
Yeah, so eugenics is we're going to make sure we have kind of a master race. So what we have to do is we got to get rid of the people who are dragging everybody else down. And so two famous promoters of eugenics was first a woman named Margaret Sanger. She ran a magazine called the Birth Control Review, and it was back in the early 20th century. And actually, one of its banner headlines was eugenics to create a master race of thoroughbreds. They thought of humans more like horses than people, that you got to, you know, cull the weak, make sure we've got only the strong. And then, of course, the other most famous person in the history of the world to practice eugenics was Adolf Hitler, that the Nazi Holocaust began with a eugenics program called the T9 program. And before Jews and Poles and Gypsies and Catholics excuse me, were killed, they were euthanizing people with disabilities, even moderate disabilities. And I think that that reveals a sharp distinction from two ways you can look at the value of human beings. You could look at it from a godless perspective, which is human beings matter what you can do. If you can do a lot, you matter a lot. If you can do a little, you matter little or none at all. And so if you can't do very much, why should we care? Take care of you? Let's get rid of you. And I think people see that's cold, inhuman, and they naturally recoil from that when they think about it clearly. The other view is that you matter because just because you're a human being, no matter how strong you are, how fast you are, how smart you are, no matter how old you are, how young you are, how able you are, no matter how developed you are or less developed, no matter even if you're a little tiny baby in the womb, because you are a human being, you matter. And you have equal rights with any other human being. You have equal basic rights and basic dignity. But then that asks the question, well, why do we have equal rights if we're all unequal in many other ways? And I would say the reason is because we all have an equal image of God written within our very being. And that's why we should treat each other equally, which is another piece of evidence that the Christian worldview, looking at the world as being a special product of creation, that God has made it, that humans matter, and we ought to love one another just as God has loved us, shows there really is something to this worldview that is far superior than any secular worldview that would end up supporting abortion and supporting, you know, acting against those who are weak and not treating all human beings equally.
And we'll leave it there. Marianne, thank you so much for that call. We appreciate your generosity in taking the time with us. 888-318-7884 is our number here. If you are a pro-choice person and would like to tell us about why you are pro-choice, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884. There are lots of people, I think, Trent, you probably have better language for this than I do because you've thought a lot more about this, but they're pro-life, but pro-choice in some circumstances. I don't know what but I would say partially pro-choice or something like that. I just want to make sure that people, you're welcome to call. If you think that abortion is completely wrong, except in X circumstance, yeah, you're welcome to call as well. 888-318-7884. Did you have a word for me?
Or oh.
Is there a word for that person? Or
well, there's like, a phrase. I mean, there's some people I call them moderately pro-choice.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They would say okay, they're against abortion, except in certain circumstances. There's also another funny group of people. There was a book by Richard Exley written several years ago called Pro-Life by Conviction, Pro-Choice by Default. And he was reflecting on his own self that he identified as pro-life. He was against abortion. But from his actions, he was no different than anyone else who identified as pro-choice because he wasn't doing anything about it.
Yeah.
So that's another funny little term I have. People who are firmly against abortion, yet they don't make any external actions to show that in any way, shape, or form. But yeah, I do believe that people who identify as pro-choice do fall on a spectrum. Some people are abortion without apology, all 9 months of pregnancy for any reason or no reason.
Right.
But most people will draw limits and boundaries, and I'm always interested in why they do draw those boundaries. Even the radical people will draw the line at birth or shortly thereafter.
It's and we do see a kind of increasing radicalization in the that like you'll have, like we were talking about the Georgia thing. Well, in Georgia, they're proposing a limit of no abortion after 6 weeks of pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And then in another state like New York or here in California, you have crazy I shouldn't use the word crazy, but
absurd,
evil. No, I'm not sure. I don't want to use the wrong word, but
what is the thing you're trying to describe?
Not even helping a child who's been born. If you intended to abort them, allow the child to die.
I would call that barbaric.
Oh, okay.
Would be a good term.
I knew you'd
because
have a word.
In the ancient Roman Empire, little babies were left to die too. 2,000 years ago, I have a bit more sympathy for them because they had less resources to take care of children. We spend $1 billion on Halloween candy anymore. To let a baby die today on a table is barbaric.
Not that we're against Halloween candy.
No, at all.
Okay, I want to clear that up because I really love Halloween candy.
Human life over candy.
Amen, brother. Why are you pro-choice? That's our question today. 888-318-7884.
Did you know you can book any of our great speakers to speak at your parish or special event? Contact one of our seminar coordinators through the Speakers Bureau section on Catholic.com today to find out more information. Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? The good news is that now there is. Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking new resource by apologist Trent Horn. That one book you can hand to anyone as a starting point for helping them find their way into or back to the practice of the Catholic faith. Don't miss out on the most important, life-changing book to come along in years. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
A generation ago, Christian parents didn't have to worry about how to explain transgenderism to their 9-year-old or help their teenager deal with mockery at school for believing in traditional marriage. But today, as our culture's moral center continues to fly apart, and with every form of deviance publicly aired and celebrated, we have no choice but to equip our kids to understand about such issues. In Made This Way, How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues, Layla Miller and Trent Horn give parents the crucial tools and techniques to form children with the understanding they need, appropriate to their age and maturity level, to meet the world's challenges. Silence can no longer be an option. If we're not teaching our children how to understand tough moral issues, then the world will. Read Made This Way and learn how to give your kids a firm foundation on which to build a life of moral clarity and happiness. Order your copy of Made This Way today by calling 1-888-291-8000 or logging on to the shop at Catholic.com.
A devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus and the Immaculate Heart of Mary?
Let's discuss what this devotion means on tomorrow's Take Two with Jerry and Debbie.
Now let's get back to more of Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Trent Horn, our guest. Trent is the author of many books, including the very popular Why We're Catholic, a wonderful book you might consider getting for your parish to give out at Easter when lots of people are in the church who might want to know why we're Catholic. Also, he's the author of Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issue. We're not talking to pro-life people today, though. All the lines are being held for pro-choice people. If you are a pro-choice person in any stage of life, we would welcome your call, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. I am going to go to line 4 now. I'm saying that just so they know I'm coming. Brandon in Battle Creek, Michigan, listening on 91.5 FM. You are on the air with Trent Horn, Brandon. Why are you pro-choice?
I'm pro-choice because I believe that it's just that, you know, that it's a choice. In no ways am I pro-abortion. I think that even if somebody, you know, I was listening to some of the other callers, and I think even if somebody doesn't have the financial means or maybe, you know, they think, you know, hey, this child is set up, you know, to not be successful. You know, for example, I myself am one of those children. You know, I grew up on food stamps, grew up very below the mean, my means.
Yeah.
But, you know, I ended up getting a bachelor's in biology, a master's degree in pharmacology, and now I'm a doctor of dental surgery.
Good job. Congrats.
Yeah. So I definitely, in response to one of the callers, I think you or one of your other guests had already mentioned that, you know, these people still can have very important lives.
Absolutely.
You know, I definitely feel that I myself have an important life, and I feel thankful for the fact
you're
that,
sounding pro-life, though. You're sad. So you said you're pro-choice, and you're sounding very pro-life.
I'm also very, very pro-choice, and I can give you a few examples. And I think that, for example, you know, there's some horrific things that go on out there. I think that, you know, children that are the products of an incestuous relationship, I can definitely see that as a reason. But I realize that across the board, you know, somebody who you know, with pro-choice means just that. You know, somebody might feel they have a very valid reason. You know, they were pregnant because of rape or incest. Or somebody might have just decided, you know, that they did it at too young of an age. And I'm not saying that I'm not the judge for that, you know.
Who's the judge, just so I can get Trent to respond? So you're saying that the mother is the judge of whether the child lives or dies in that situation?
Well, I'm not saying, yeah, I mean, essentially they are. I mean, in the end, they will be the one making the decision. What I meant by judge was whether it's, you know, right or wrong.
Is up to her.
Biblical sense.
All right, let's get Trent to respond to that real quick.
Well, I guess for this argument, there's not a lot for me to go here that it's – I don't see a lot of premises or build up for me why I should accept this conclusion. Essentially, you're saying that abortion should be legal because women should have a right to have an abortion because they have a right to have an abortion. That it seems a little circular to me, that you're just saying, well, women have the right to do this. They can choose to do that. They get to decide. Right. I get all that. But why? Why does each woman get to decide if this child lives or dies? Why should that be up to them? That's more the question I need to have answered.
Okay. Well, to answer that question, I think essentially, you know, it's because it's her body. You know, she's the owner of her body and what's in her body. I mean, you know, for example, if you have a fungal infection, it's a living organism that's on your body, and maybe it's not in your best interest to have that. And so you go to the doctor and you have that removed. In no way whatsoever am I comparing that to.
It sounds like you're basically, and you can see, correct me if I'm wrong, you're making an argument from ownership. That, well, a woman has the right to say this to a fetus, unborn child, whatever terms we want to use. It's the same thing, unborn human being. A woman has the right to say this to an unborn child, to remove him or her from the womb, even if it results in the child's death, because she owns her body. It's an argument of ownership. She owns this place. She gets to decide who lives there. She's basically kind of evicting this tenant, so to speak, from her body. And she owns this place, and she decides who gets to stay there and who doesn't. And you gave the example, like, you know, if I have a fungus on my toe, I can evict that living fungus. The problem I would have with that analogy, though, is that, of course, a fungus is not a human being. You know, you can kill a lot. The pro-life position is not that all life has the same value. It's that all human beings have the same basic right to life. So a more apt analogy might be, I'm very sorry, Cy, to have to do this to
you. Oh, I should have known. I forgot all about it, but okay.
Two calls in. I have... Brandon, I apologize. I have this horrible penchant to my thought experiments of killing my colleague and host of Catholic Answers Live, Cy Kellett. But imagine so we broadcast here in San Diego. And there's a beautiful San Diego harbor. I don't know if you've ever been, but definitely worth visiting. So imagine I take my boat out for the day, and I discover one Mr. Cy Kellett has smuggled away onto my boat. And I say, hey, you know, it's my boat. I own this boat. Get out of my boat. And I push him overboard, and I sail away. and he drowns. I think most people would say that that's wrong. You know, you can't, even if someone is on your property unlawfully, you can't, in the process of kill them through the process of eviction. You have to do it in a nonviolent way. But the analogy breaks down even further, because what if I invited Cy? I sent Cy an invitation to come to my boat.
You would do that.
And then I said, I'm tired of having him here. Well, 99% of the time, when you engage in sexual relations, it's setting up the course of events for the baby to be in the woman's body or for Cy to be on the boat. So I think it breaks down even further. That's where I struggle with these kind of arguments from bodily ownership. Do you see what I'm saying here?
Help you a little bit with this, and it's probably much more radical and than you might be expecting. But I do view abortion. I do view abortion as murder.
Okay.
But I think that a woman should have the right to do that, just like the man on your boat. I think it would be horribly wrong for you to throw him off of your boat. But in the end, you do have the free will to do that. Now, I think it's wrong. I think it's morally wrong.
It sounds like you're making a distinction between something being morally wrong, and it's so morally wrong it ought to be illegal. Like, is there a difference? So I'm guessing you're making a distinction between something that's morally wrong or evil, because there's evil things you could do to people that are not illegal. Like in most states, adultery, for example, is actually not illegal anymore. It's illegal in some places. But it has to reach a certain kind of moral gravity for the law to step in. So you feel like it could be morally wrong. Maybe the law isn't supposed to step in on these things. Is that what you're saying?
I don't think it's a place for the law to step in. And I think it was you that was mentioning it to another caller. And I think you really aptly, or maybe it was the caller that said it, the caller asked you, I think, they said, well, you know, well, how do we fix it? You know, or you know, or how do we, you know, what is the answer?
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, we as a people, as a culture, as a country, as a world, we really need to change. We really need to change our thought processes.
Well,
I'm not necessarily...
Brandon, let me go back, because essentially the position that you took in with these thought experiments is to kind of what's called bite the bullet. In that, what I'm trying to show is that if we don't tolerate these actions for born people, we shouldn't tolerate them for the unborn. And I think the eviction analogy, like, you're right, it becomes a very radical position you have. You say, well, sometimes murder is okay if you have a really, really good reason. I'm always I'm very skeptical of rationales that begin, sometimes murder is okay if. That I'm not a road I want to go down very far. So, for example, I want to go back to the eviction analogy. There's this show on Netflix my wife and I enjoy watching. It's a British show about repo men who work for the government. It's called Can't Pay, We'll Take It Away. Or I guess in England they'd be saying, Can't Pay, We'll Take It Away. And so they go and they serve these papers and they evict people. And so sometimes these tenants, you know, they're not paying rent and they're in these homes for like 12 months rent-free. And the landlords are really suffering financially. So if the landlord said, look, I'm not going to wait for the high court to resolve this in 6 or 8 months. It's been 2 months. They're not leaving. It's my house. I'm just going to go in there, shoot them, and drag them out onto the street. Do you think we should allow that in a civilized society?
You know, I think that, you know, I think that the problem is when you say, should we allow?
Should it be legal? Yeah. Should it be legal?
Yeah. Okay. Legal, no. But I think here's the problem. So let's say you make abortion illegal. Let's go that one real quick. Then you set up a mechanism. People are, you know, like, you know, with prohibition in the 1920s with alcohol, you know, they made alcohol illegal and people, you know, were bootlegging and there was a lot of organized crime around it.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that if you made abortion illegal, that it would set up a mechanism for mothers.
But that's true for anything. For example, child pornography is legal, but you'd agree there's a massive underground network that still supplies it to people, correct?
Yes.
But because it's illegal, we can still act to protect children in some capacity. Whereas if it were not illegal, we couldn't do anything. So for me, what I see here is that go ahead.
I didn't mean to judge you here. You were killing it up to that point. That was not a great analogy, because what I'm talking about is that for example, with the child pornography analogy, the person, the child or whatever that's involved is obviously the victim. And yes, there's, it's illegal and there's underground things going on, but the, it's not because it's illegal that they're still a victim. What I'm saying is if you made abortion illegal, okay, you might be creating more deaths out of people seeking, backdoor abortion.
So the argument you're making, and we'll have to wrap this quick because we have to go to a break here soon, is essentially if you make it illegal, more people will die because not only the kids are going to die, but the moms are going to do things that are unsafe, and the moms will suffer as well. The problem I have with that argument is that it assumes that women will not act like law-abiding citizens like most people generally do. Generally, when something is illegal, people don't break the law. So that would assume if we made abortion illegal, the exact same numbers of women would still choose to have abortions. But generally, when something's illegal, people choose to not do that. The law also serves to educate people. And finally, though, the moral logic behind that argument I don't think holds, because what we'd be saying here is, well, we should make it legal so it's safer for a bigger person to hurt a little person. And that, to me, just seems morally backward and not something that a just society could support. So something to think about there, but I do appreciate the conversation and saying I've been killing it so far. It's always nice to have a good back and forth. Hopefully we can continue to have good back and forths with our other callers, but unfortunately with live radio, so many more calls to get to, but have enjoyed them so far. If you have any other questions, though, definitely consider my book, Persuasive Pro-Life, our website at Catholic.com, or call back next time I'm on air. But thanks for calling in.
Thank you very much for the call. We'll take a quick break. Be right back with more right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catch Catholic Answers Live anytime at Catholic.com.
Catholic Answers Live is proudly supported by CatholicChemistry.com, a new dating site for Catholics who want to do dating right and believe relationships start with Catholic chemistry. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicChemistry.com for their generous support on the web at CatholicChemistry.com.
Pope Francis reminds us that it does not take a specialized degree in theology to become a great evangelist. We're all called to evangelize. Think about the woman at the well. After she encountered Jesus, she immediately went into the city and invited others to meet him as she had. You and I can go out now and do the same. And St. Paul Street Evangelization can help. Get involved today by contacting us at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
The prayers of the elderly are powerful. Why? Because you learn in old age to depend upon God. There's no one else. Because you are still made to the image and likeness of God, no matter how old you are. You're valuable to God. Don't let anybody tell you you're not.
For more information on Mother Angelica, visit Religious Catalog at EWTNRC.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Trent Horn, our guest, both hours today. Why are you pro-choice is the question of the hour. If you're a pro-choice person, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Let us go now to Mary in Chicago, Illinois. I almost changed Mary to Sherry because of the Chicago thing. Sorry, Mary. Why are you pro-choice, Mary?
I think that everyone loses when we break it down to this, like, legal, illegal, like, pro-life, pro-choice dichotomy. But I think that there's just definitely, like, no one should ever be put in the position where they have to, like, they will be legally forced to carry a child to term if it meant sacrificing their own life, for example. Like, I think there is a lot of nuance and problems with having a yes or no legal, illegal answer. And I mean, as the last caller talked about, like, making abortions illegal in this country only restricts access to abortions for poor people. Like, I mean, if we're being real about it, like,
can I go through some of those points here for you? That most recent argument you gave, that making abortion illegal restricts access for poor people. I would agree with you that restricting access to good things for those who are poor is bad. So if you make a law saying that, you know, that keeps poor people from going to college or getting married or getting jobs, that would be bad. You shouldn't keep poor people access from good things. But if you pass a law that prevents poor people from getting access to bad things, that's okay. Like if you make murder illegal, rich people can still get away with it hiring hitmen, but it'll keep poor people from being able to murder each other. But that's okay. We don't want anybody to be murdering. So I don't see how just because we have to figure out if abortion is morally right or morally wrong and what how severely immoral it might be before we can talk about where you know it's disproportionate impacts on communities. Number two, I'd like some clarification from you. You said a woman shouldn't be forced to carry a baby if it means she might lose her life. Do you mean like if she's in poor health and she might physically die?
Yeah. No, okay. I said like I just it, like it was one example of how there like is nuance that we like have to acknowledge and talk about.
Right. But Mary, how does it follow, though, that just because there might be very hard cases where we apply the law, it doesn't seem to me then that we just jump to the next thing, which is, okay, let's not have a law at all. We don't want to outlaw abortion because what if there's this really rare case where we have to, medical professionals have to act in a way to save a woman's life and the baby dies as a side effect. So for example, do you think we should have a law that says you can't run a red light?
So I'm not arguing about the legality and moral like status of all laws. I just mean that there is like you said, like a medical professional should make that decision, not a congressman.
Well, you are talking about laws because you're saying congressmen shouldn't make these decisions. So you're saying we should, do you believe we should have laws making abortion illegal?
I like what you do, like that's morally wrong is between you and God and something that you're going to deal with in your confessional and like you're going to deal with the infinite knowledge and mercy of God. And, you know, it just whether or not someone sins against God or like, you know,
Mary, I'm asking a very simple question here. Do you think there should be laws that make abortion illegal?
No, because I think it means like, I mean, I know you think that this is a fringe case, but like every woman that I know has been either harassed or assaulted and like saying that like they don't have the right to potentially abort that baby because like there's a literal law against it. Oh. I think, you know, that's a very terrible personal choice that there shouldn't be illegal, literally have to go to jail for.
Okay. So you're saying we're not talking about jail. We're talking about a law here. Punishments come later. So you're saying a woman should be allowed let me see if you agree with this statement. A woman should be allowed to get an abortion for any reason she sees fit. Do you agree with that statement?
I think that your by outlining specific use cases, what you're saying is that like you know better than God or this woman what she should do with her body.
Right. Okay, so Mary, so then your position is, since I don't know any better, I'm not in a position to judge, it follows a woman should be allowed to have an abortion for any reason she sees fit. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, because a woman isn't a boat by your analogy. She's a person.
Okay, is the child she's carrying, the fetus within her body, is that a person?
Of course. Also a person. And like what happens between them is their business, not our government.
So the government has no business if one person wants to kill another person?
I don't think the government has any business in your vagina.
In my vagina, or you mean collective vaginas?
You know what she means.
So
I'm
trying to understand. Well, Mary, okay. You're saying the government has no business in things that concern a woman's sexual organs?
I think that if there were similar laws with men's organs, there would be a greater uproar.
Why? Why do you think that? Like, for example, I think the government should be concerned about a woman's vagina. I'll give you an example. If a man puts, and you know, tender years and graphic language, if a man puts his member in a woman's vagina without her consent, he should be legally punished for that. So government has an interest in that. Would you agree?
The thing that should happen but doesn't practically happen in our current legal system.
But
going to not punish that.
Mary, hold on. Wait, come on, Mary, let's have a real conversation here. Come on, let's have a real conversation. Rape is a crime, correct?
Count five people on my hand who've gone to court against the rapist and not gotten justice.
Oh, okay.
That's awful.
But that's the thing. That is awful. But at least it's good we live in a country where rape is illegal, because there is a time and there are other places where rape is not. So it's good rape is illegal. Would you agree with me? Did you? Okay.
No, she went away.
That's unfortunate, because I firmly... Mary, I hope that you're listening, and I hope you call back, because I want to have a real conversation with you. But this conversation, it unfortunately had a lot of buzzwords and catchphrases that made me sound like Mary was a person that I would describe as an advocate for legal abortion. And I want to have a real conversation here. So, for example, in a real conversation, when someone asks a question...
Can one person kill another person?
Right. When someone asks a question, you answer. And people will ask me questions like that, and I'm happy to give a straight answer to that. And so, and I think, yeah, I would love for Mary to call back. I'd love to continue the conversation. But there's sometimes, Cy, there are certain buzzwords and phrases in a conversation that clue me in that a person is either a volunteer or a professional advocate for a cause. She sounded like maybe a young college or post-college student. Phrases like, a congressman shouldn't decide this, my doctor should. That's straight out of Planned Parenthood's playbook, for example.
Yeah.
So right. Not able. So let's talk about the issue that's involved. And so here, you know, saying government shouldn't be involved in my genitalia.
Yeah.
Those are slogans. These are things to shut down a conversation. When let's think it through a little bit. Let's think it through. Yeah, I gave a perfect example. Government should be involved that we treat sexual assault different than other kinds of assault. And I think it's right for government to be involved in that. And rapists that are unpunished, that's a crime. So the point is that what happens within a woman's body, it does matter. Government's involved, but guess what? What if there's another person in there? What if there's a baby? Why isn't government stepping up for that person? So I want to have real conversations with people where I just hate it. I hate when we try to talk about important issues and it's that cable news kind of interaction. That is the kind of interaction I absolutely hate the most.
Yeah.
And you know it all the time. You look on Fox News, look on CNN, look on MSNBC.
Everybody, you know, just says their points.
Well, Todd, this is what we need. We need this and that. We need just government out of people's bodies. And then the pro-life person has just like their quick soundbite. And it's like, well, no. Talk to each other here for a minute. Let's talk for a minute.
Right.
And for a lot of people, like for our two previous callers, Marianne and Brandon, we had good conversations. We could have good back and forth because these are seekers.
No,
they're seekers for truth. But other people, Mary, maybe you'll call back and prove me wrong. Mary sounded more like a crusader. I'm out to win and defeat you. And so we can't have a conversation.
If I may, Trent, it also seems like Mary may have been ill-served by not actually having been exposed to ideas that she doesn't agree with. Because it can be very upsetting when you've always been told to those people that you've never been exposed to an actual conversation, an actual place where people had to die. What you've had is your professors and your parents, and everybody agrees on this. And those other people are troglodytes.
And now this happens.
And now you face someone who can converse with you, and you don't know what
to
do.
Now this happens in Catholic circles too.
So no, sure.
Anybody.
I've done it.
It's always bad when we end up in an ideological bubble.
Yeah.
And so suddenly the other side becomes this nebulous, nefarious other side. When it's like, no, they're people. We're going to agree. We're going to disagree. But we can have a conversation. And we can have one that can be vigorous yet respectful.
Right.
And I think that should be fine to have.
And it sometimes seems that the people who will start the conversation with, we need to have a reasonable conversation about that, are the ones who become most frustrated when you start to have
a reasonable conversation
is you listening
is just
to them.
You listening, agreeing, and kowtowing to the demands that they have. Whereas, in a reasonable conversation between disagreeing parties, we can have something called reasonable disagreement.
Yeah.
That's what we have to do in this.
I'd like more kowtowing from you. I'd like you to kowtow to
this.
Stop killing me off and that kind of thing. Kowtow to me.
I've got a fever, and the only prescription is more kowtowing.
Okay.
More kowtow.
There are more folks on the line, and we're not blowing you off. We just, when we get on these important topics like this, we don't want to take the call when there's only 30 seconds left. So we chat for the last 30 seconds. Let me just be honest with you about that. So if you're on the line, please stay on the line. We do want to get to you. We just don't want to give you the last 30 seconds of the show and then shuffle you off. Our topic today, why are you pro-choice? We welcome pro-choice callers. We'd love to have a conversation with you if that's something you're interested in. If you want to just repeat the slogans to us, you're welcome to do that as well. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. Trent Horn is our guest. He's got a whole bunch of books. And like everybody else who's got Catholic Answers books out there, his are on sale, 15% off. Go to shop.catholic.com. Put in the promo code SPRING19 and you get 15% off your whole order.